This is exactly right.
Forgive me for interrupting. I'm Bridger Weiniger, host of I Said No Gifts on Exactly Right. Each week, I invite my favorite people in comedy over to chat, and they always bring a gift. We're coming up on our 200th episode, and every episode is a gem. I have welcomed all kinds of great guests, including Cola Scola, Bowen Yang, Robbie Hoffman. It goes on and on and on. And you don't want to miss the 200th episode with the great Maria Bamford. What does she bring me? Find out April 25th. New episodes every Thursday. Follow I Said No Gifts wherever you get your podcasts.
I could manage, and it was because it's going to make my life easier on the road.
Yeah,
but now I fucking hate the way my hair looks, and I wish I hadn't done it.
Of course, but you know why? Because it's permanent and you're trapped in it, but it looks super cute.
Thank you.
It's an interesting also counter thing to your, like, when you had that cute dress on today, but you had that hair. It's cool. Okay. It's doing the job you wanted it to do.
Okay.
But I'm sure it's like getting a perm or like, what the fuck?
Yeah. It doesn't, like, Vince keeps obviously not
divorcing you.
Vince keeps obviously not saying something.
But here's,
you know,
the thing.
What I mean?
Yes, but that's also the thing of guys are scared because if he knows you don't like it a little bit, he's afraid to walk that line and go off into the forest of I said the one thing and now she's going crazy,
or like it too much, and you're like, well, what do you mean you like it like this?
Yes. There's a lot of ways to.
He just keeps saying it's a different look.
God bless him.
It's a different look.
Oh,
I know.
God bless him.
Is that recorded?
Hello.
Hello.
And welcome
to My Favorite Murder.
You guys, we're back in reality again.
Back to life.
This is reality, right?
Back to reality.
Back.
I feel like this office could be a, like, portal.
We could be dead.
Let's hope we're not.
Because we have so much to do tomorrow morning.
Technical. I felt like a businesswoman this week, which kind of is fun. I feel like that's what, when I was a kid, I was like, Barbie's a businesswoman.
Yeah.
You know, and now I'm Barbie with my stupid Brazilian blowout that
that's
I hate.
Right. Describe your hair to people.
To me, it's just so basic bitch. It's like somewhere between basic fucking bitch and like a heavy metal rocker dude.
Hello.
Remember when like the heavy metal rockers would have like what's his name?
Lita Ford.
Yeah, but I'm talking about a dude.
Oh.
I guess Lita Ford. Guns N' Roses. Yeah.
Oh, Axl Rose.
Yeah. It's just so stick straight that I feel weird, and I look more like Liza Minnelli than I ever have, I feel like. It's just a lot of face for me. I think I need a balloon of hair around my face to frame it, and instead this is so flat that it's just like, here's your face.
Yeah. I empathize. I have cut my bangs in a way where people had no choice but stare at my big fat fucking face. It's a terrible feeling to feel exposed, to feel like you've painted yourself into a style corner.
Mm-hmm.
It does not look like that.
Thank you.
It's super cute. It's also very different for you.
Yes.
Because you're usually doing like a half finger wave bob number with a this and a that.
Yeah, a little bit of back comb.
And every time I look over at you, it looks like you're about to go like, row, row, with an electric guitar. And I fucking love it, because then you're also wearing like a little cocktail dress. So it's a fun, I think... If you would fold in a combat boot with those, that cocktail dress number, you could really get a my 20s look going that would be very satisfying.
How about if I paint a fucking lightning bolt across my face?
Okay.
Are you with me?
Just well, separate from the hair?
Yeah.
How about you start doing this?
How about I get a tattoo of a lightning bolt?
Please, let's get into phase tats quickly.
Please, immediately.
I'm going to get a little mustache. Right over my actual mustache.
What if you got, you know how finger mustaches were really popular for a while, where you'd have like a little secret. What if you got a finger tattooed over where your mustache is?
Some weird fat finger on your upper lip to be like, look.
Yeah.
Remember the mid-2000s?
Right. That becomes trendy.
Oh.
Let's start that.
Let's start it.
Let's start it. Let's pop it off. What do you have anything?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
I have pressing information from weeks ago, of course. I would say this was my headline. I said the Netflix series Dairy Girls takes place in Belfast.
Okay.
The whole reason it's called Dairy Girls is because it takes place in Londonderry, which, as many very patient Irish and Northern Irish murderinos have let me know, aren't really even that close to each other.
Great.
I think.
How are you supposed to know that without looking at a map?
Look, I've looked at these maps.
Yes.
I've even been to this part of Ireland, but. I think Northern Ireland, I say Belfast, and it's over. I didn't even really realize there were other cities to talk about. Even though I'd watched the series, saw this little sign that said, welcome to Londonderry, or whatever the hell it is. There's a bunch of identifiers. Like, you know why it's called Dairy Girls.
Well, that's not, there's a contingency, I think, that is after you.
Yes.
Coming after you.
Okay.
And from Ireland, and we love it.
As well as?
Every...
New Mexico.
From inside of your own head, even.
That's where they're getting me the worst.
That's a rough one there.
It's very true. So apologies to
yourself.
You guys go apologize, not me, to the great people over at Dairy Girls, which is, if you haven't seen that series, I watched it because someone recommended it to me on Twitter. Loved it so much. It's so funny. I just adore it. And then it ends beautifully. Mm. And I hear there's going to be a second season.
Yay.
So now we'll all know exactly where it's coming from and be so much more.
We'll know where we are on the map.
Yes.
It'll be great. I'll take a pin and we'll pin it on the map.
I'm going to have Stephen drop a pin into Londonderry.
You know what we should do with this wall of the office? This gray, it's kind of depressing. It looks like an asylum wall.
Yes.
Is have a map.
Of all the places we made mistakes?
Sure. Or Boston. Are going to make mistakes.
Yes, that's
so it'll
right.
It'll be the solar system on one side. Speaking of Netflix, so we got a lot of asks, did you guys watch the Ted Bundy documentary?
Oh, right, right.
So I was like, I better watch the Ted Bundy documentary. I watched two episodes and I was like, why am I so angry and not enjoying this? And I usually am interested in Ted Bundy shit. And I realize it's because I have to hear his fucking voice. And that's the point of the show is to hear him talk to a reporter.
Right.
And I fucking hate him so much.
Yeah.
And I don't want, he's said what he's going to say by murdering a bunch of women. That was his side of the story.
That's right.
Why are he's a fucking megalomaniac. He's a fucking known liar. And it's not diabolical. He's a little pussy who got fucking intimidated by women and wanted to be famous. And the only way he could do it was by killing women because he's so into it. Why are we listening to him and his side of the story?
I'll tell you, my theory is, because same with me, I don't want to watch it because I don't like watching killers talk about their craft and all that bullshit that,
totally,
that
that's all
elevates
the... It's the actor inside the actor studios for fucking murderers.
You're exactly right. But I think that was that thing at the time they went... Oh my God.
Yeah.
We don't know what this is. We have to get this out.
Look
have to get it.
Look how pretty he is too.
Right. Well, it's that thing of people fall for this so much. If you're good looking, that means you're good.
Right.
It's the most basic mistake human beings make. We all do it. You give credit to good looking people. You think they're good people. You think tall men are great leaders.
If you're
nice, whatever they say,
that means you're kind.
Yes. It means that you have no agenda and you're just being
right.
Cool. There's all these ways that we want things to be that simple. So I understand recording Ted Bundy to go look at this monster in this shell of he almost looks like a British lit professor.
Uh-huh.
He's so patches on the elbows and look, I just want to talk about this.
That stupid fucking smirk. Go on.
But well, just for me, it's for other people to look at. I don't want to hear him because he's not a truthful person. You're not going to get anything from it aside from being massively creeped out. And what I like is Billy Jensen, kind of in the wake of that and a trailer coming out for the Zac Efron Ted Bundy movie.
Billy Jensen is fucking putting his mouth where his money goes.
He has created a thread of the Ted Bundy victims talking about each one of them individually. I read retweeted it on the My Favorite Murder Twitter feed, and you can find it. I'm sure most people follow Billy Jensen.
But he also, I just saw this. He also just posted that Bundy confessed to murdering 8 other women in all these different cities. Maybe he said maybe it's bullshit, but to the medical examiners in those states, if you have female remains from the era that you don't have funds to process, direct message me and I will help pay for the extraction and familial search to give them back their names.
Yes.
Billy, we love you.
Billy, tell us how to help you.
Look, listen, you're going to have a podcast on our network and we love you. And
was that an Easter egg teaser?
Easter egg teaser. It's not even a tease. It's like the whole thing. But so, and I also wanted to say that I'm really looking forward to friend of the podcast, Celine Beth Calderon. She's doing a documentary called Theodore, where she just interviewed that they interview people who experienced him and survived the survivors and all this shit, which I'm really I like that part. It's interesting to me.
Yes, because that's where you're going to get a real story.
Right.
Is the person, Anne Rule style, the person who sat next to him. We went to dinner the other night and my friend Denise had just read A Stranger Beside Me, and she's so mad at Anne Rule. She's so mad at Anne Rule for falling for Ted Bundy's act. But I was like, but that's how good he was. That's how evil it is and whatever.
That's why it's so amazing, I think, is because he was able to fool Anne fucking Rule.
Anne Rule, an ex-policewoman, a fucking investigator, like the whole thing.
Yeah.
But yes, the documentary you're talking about, that was the girl that was in the front row of our show that time,
right? We picked her and she came on stage, remember?
Yes.
What show was that?
I think it was in Texas, if I'm not mistaken. I think or Portland.
Salt Lake. Or Salt Lake.
Could have been Salt Lake. But the people who lived through it, the people who can sit there and go, here's what it looked like when this lunatic was coming through my window.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the only people I want to hear.
Totally.
From.
Or here's even the psychology and this, not to fucking totally disparage this documentary, because it's actually really good and interesting. But whenever Ted starts talking, I get angry.
Yeah.
Pissed off. Like I wrote 3 pages of fucking scratch of me. Listen, I had some fucking rosé, I'll admit it. But I wrote all this crazy, insane rambling. Go follow Theodore Documentary on Instagram, or just look for the Theodore Documentary. I know there's it's Theodore the Documentary, and I know there's a trailer for it, and they're still making it, and I'm really excited
for it. I can't wait.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can't wait for that to come out.
I'm going to do a weird thing real quick. I keep hearing my fucking overalls jangling. So I'm going to undo them. So everyone at home is like, what the fuck is that noise?
What is that? Why are they wearing a small bell? Oh, I do have another thing.
Okay.
So we had the great privilege of doing a live show specifically for TNT's new limited series, I Am the Night, mm-hmm. directed by Patty Jenkins.
Which right now we're not being paid to say.
That's right. This is just talking about it because we lived it. Directed by Patty Jenkins of Wonder Woman, starring Chris Pine, and also executive produced by Chris Pine. Hooray for Chris Pine. But during that live show, where we were, at some point in 5 years, we should release the unedited version of that live show.
Absolutely not. No fucking way. We're burning it to the ground. Steven's going to release it.
I think time capsule wise, it could be a good one. I lost my mind personally at the top of that show. I was so stressed out. But I mean, it turned out fun and amazing, but it was a little bit crazy. So at one point, I said I was talking about what was happening around the case, and I referred to something and I called it espionage.
Yes.
I almost got away with it. And then George was like, did you mean to say espionage? And it was no. It was the wrong word. I want you to do that.
Well, that's all I ever do. So I was probably was so excited that you did it.
Yes, have
word.
At. But I couldn't until somebody on Twitter named at Silly Celia, CillyCilia.
Yep.
She tweeted me the day after it came out, or the day of it coming out, and said, is the word you were looking for subterfuge? And I was like, yes, it was.
That's amazing. I would have never fucking guessed that.
Right.
What a great word. Let's all use that in our daily lives. Can you tell me the meaning of it?
Subterfuge just means trickery and secrecy, and kind of like you don't know what's going on,
like
because
almost
someone's
like
being
submarine.
Subterfuge. I think so. Someone else also wrote in and said, were you looking for the word intrigue?
Oh.
Which probably also would have
That's
fit.
Good Excellent. Why don't we use those words more?
We will now.
I'm intrigued by the subterfuge of the fact that we don't use those fucking words. Did I use that good in a sentence?
Yes, you did.
Amazing.
And quickly.
And quickly, because I'm so smart.
Well, so thank you. Thank you all for... thank you for that. And also for all the people who came. It was raining so hard LA that night.
It was kind of like cool romantic-y because we were looking to watch a fucking thing about the Black Dahlia, which is what the show's about. It sounds like we are now integrating ads into the podcast.
We are
but
not.
I swear to God, we're not.
This is the difficulty of when you like start doing stuff like this because it's what we really did, but it's also a commercial.
Right.
So, you know, look, this is where we are.
this was brought to you by
Jefferson Mays was the actor we interviewed at the end of that live show, who
what
was the greatest.
A joy.
I mean, just the most interesting person to talk to.
Yes.
A delight. Support him and all he does. He's also in the Ballad of Buster Scruggs.
Oh, right.
On Netflix.
I haven't seen it.
Anyway.
What else?
How was your day?
I spent most of it with you in meetings.
I know.
In an uncomfortable dress.
We got
to the dentist last night even.
Whoa, at nighttime?
Yeah.
You can do that. Oh, that's not safe. No, Georgia, you can't.
Was I tricked?
Is it a home dentist office?
Basement, yeah.
No!
It's an attic.
It's in
the attic dental office.
Right up. It's in the Soden house.
Yeah.
Where Dr. Hodel used to live.
That's right.
Well, that's good. You got something taken care of.
Yeah.
Let's have a new corner and we call it errands.
Taking care of business
with errands. Two Z's. I bought paper towels.
Yes. I'm proud of you. That actually is hard.
Because you can't. You don't want to carry it.
No, totally. Yes. Can I tell you what? I didn't even think about telling you this.
I quit the podcast.
I put all our money in my name.
And I'm going to Aruba, Jamaica.
So the other day, Sunday, I met up with my dad real quick for lunch and, got to talking about the book because I gave him a copy of our book because he's special, pre-order.
Right.
You can pre-order it. You don't have it. Gave him a copy. He says, I have some notes.
accuracy notes or just overall?
Both.
Okay.
And it was really, and I'm going to save the piece of paper he wrote on forever because it's so Marty. It's notes on like page this, you wrote that. And it was also clarifying some shit about my life that I didn't like, that I wrote about that I didn't know.
Oh.
That in the book, he was like, cause I write about my parents a lot. It was crazy. Yeah.
Was it a helpful thing? Was it like good to hear it?
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. I had this fucking notion for years that was false.
Wow.
Yeah.
I think that happens a lot.
Yeah. It's so hard, Stark, that my dad had notes for my fucking book. I mean,
I swear to you,
it's too late.
If I send my dad, well, yeah, exactly.
Oh,
but if I send my dad my book, he's going to go, can I get it on the Kindle? Like my is as supportive as my dad is. I can feel it. That's how we are.
Yeah.
Kilgariff's, it's like you have to feel what we're doing. You can't really listen to
what
we're saying.
It's like an ESP thing.
Yes. And having watched, it's like, yes, it's like you have to be connected on a different level.
Yes.
Because there's a couple things going on because of the shame issues. We can't really do things directly. It's always a weird sidebar. So it's like, if I'm really proud of you, I need to insult your sweater. It's that kind of shit I grew up with where I'm like,
oh, thank you.
Hold on. Exactly. So I think I just realized as we were talking about this, like, I think if I handed my dad a book that had my name on the front of it, he would lose it. But that would be, he would have to have that reaction of like, oh, I can't
use
this.
He'd walk into the other room and start shopping.
And then he would, later on, when I wasn't there, he would tell other people how proud he was of me.
Aww.
And then my sister would have to loop back third hand because
your dad's really proud of you.
God forbid.
Yeah,
she's mad about it. So there's a little bit of a... There's a little tone to it.
You know, dad's real proud of you.
Dad's talking about your thing again.
It's like, I'm a school teacher, but dad's real proud of this book you barfed out.
I'm the person that's keeping America's children together for $11 a day.
Yeah.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Karen.
Thanks for you and your friend.
My dad did text me. Listen, this just sounds like I'm bragging now because my dad is a sensitive person. You know that. But he texts, I'm crying. He cried during the book multiple times. And he said, I think Ray Bradbury would be proud of you. And then I barfed.
Oh, right onto the book.
on my phone. But he texted it, and there was probably an emoji. It's fine.
I was saying to my therapist the other day, this, you know, as much as like things feel crazy, whatever, we talk about this maybe too much, but that also it feels very vulnerable. And so there's this kind of like tension that I feel like is getting much better now that we have like, you know, people in place.
Now that we've cloned Steven multiple times.
Exactly. Now that we've hired a staff.
We put a Steven in here and a Steven over there.
Steven's no longer the full staff. Yeah,
and Vince does this. And
yeah.
Okay.
We have more support.
Yes.
But that feeling of vulnerability is something I've worked my entire life to not experience.
Yeah.
I'm a stand-up comic. I do it by myself. I don't rely on other people.
You were
I
really
don't
good at that in the
people.
Beginning. when all I was in like, love me and trust me and let's cry together. Oh, I'm your best friend now.
I mean, what an experience. But it's just like, then you just have to go, too bad.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Too bad. That's the exchange. We get this fun, cool experience, and we have to be the most vulnerable, stripped down.
It fucking works better when you're vulnerable.
It's better.
It sucks. It's hard.
It's, yeah, it's like kind of flexing your bicep all day long is what it feels like to me, where I'm like, it makes me want to freak out, and I just can't.
Once in a while, you can. All right. Well, yeah. Go. We have a merch store at myfavoritemurder.com. You can buy shirts and lots of cool shit. There's a fan cult at there as well with extra special things.
You can join. And we're building out the extra special things that the fan cult gets all the time. Yep. So, you know, don't
be mad
if you
at
join
us.
Now, just know that the future holds many wonderful surprises.
For example, since we've been paid to mention it twice, the TNT I Am the Night live show, it was only available to the fan cult.
Right.
So shit like that, where it's like, well, we have a show, we have to fill it. It's like tickets are free. Let's tell the fan cult about it.
And yes.
So it's stuff like that.
Yeah. Insider stuff.
Perks. Listen.
Perks. Look.
Keep giving you shit. And you keep appreciating it.
God damn it.
Why
it's
am I,
very vulnerable
why
making
am I mad at you?
This exchange of love.
That's right. Who's
do we? Whoa, no.
Oh, Steven's not ready.
No.
Failed. I stumbled.
Steven.
Do we count the I Am the Night order or the San Diego show? Because if we go by I Am the Night, then Georgia, you would be first.
Yeah,
you
I want to be first.
George
do
Trudell.
It.
All right.
Great. Go. Do it. We go by that. I was going to say no. And then you said that. And I'm like, yes.
Yes.
I'm going to go first because I want to. There's so much fucking information in here and I need to get it out of my brain or I won't listen to you.
Okay, great.
Your story.
I understand that feeling.
Also, I just cracked a can of wine. Let's do this before I get shit-faced.
Boom.
Get ready. I have a koozie over this can of wine. A We Watch Wrestling koozie.
Yeah.
So, for all you know, this could be a can of vodka because you can't see the label.
That's right. And hey, Smirnoff, why aren't there cans of vodka out there for me?
I need a can of vodka. Let's make that.
Great.
Merchandising. Okay. So, fuck. I first heard about this case recently on an episode of one of my favorite shows, Cold Justice.
Yes.
So fucking good.
What's cold about it?
The cases and the weather, because they're usually, you know, wearing coats.
It's all back east.
It's like a double entendre.
So this is it's cold cases, essentially.
Cold cases and the... Steven, blow your nose. You want a tissue?
Oh, sure.
I don't have one. I have a
perfect
used
solution.
One. I have a used one.
I'll be perfect.
Okay. So Cold Justice is it's this fucking badass prosecutor named Kelly Siegler. She goes to small towns or big towns or wherever that have cold cases and they have a case that they need help with. She starts it from the very beginning and they try to figure out who fucking cold case that shit.
Yeah.
So she does it for this one. I've never fucking heard of it, even though there's something about it that you will know.
Oh.
So I'm going to tell you this and then I'm going to get into it. This is the murder of Kathy Page. But let me start with this and you'll fucking understand.
Okay.
So about nearly 30 years ago, this dude is a writer from the UK. He is on a Greyhound road trip across the US to like see the sights, smell things, you know,
sure.
Taste stuff. While traveling through this town called Vidor, Texas, which is about 100 miles from Houston, he spots three billboards off the I-10.
Uh-huh.
The three of them read, one reads, Vidor police botched up the case, Second one reads, waiting for a confession. The third says, this could happen to you.
Mm-hmm.
And so that writer and then director, of course, is Martin McDonagh.
Yes.
Who made last year three billboards outside of Ebbing, Missouri.
Yes.
He said he couldn't remember where it was that he saw it. He assumed it was a woman because it, you know, broke his heart and seemed like a mom kind of thing to do.
Right.
He was incorrect, but it always stuck with him. And then he kind of made the characters from there.
Okay. So basically that was his imagined version.
Yeah.
And you're about to give us the real.
That's fucking
oh,
right.
Oh shit, girl. Nice.
This is three billboards outside of Vidor, Texas.
Okay.
So here's the real story. Very early in the morning, about 4:30 in the morning, on May 14th, 1991, 34-year-old Kathy Page was found in her car in the driver's seat, and the car is stuck in a ditch. It appears to be a car accident. It's about 100 yards from her house that she lives at with her now estranged husband and two young daughters. I think they're like 9 and 12 or so, in Vidor, Texas. Her body is found at approximately 5 a.m. by, it says a paper boy, but I think it's just like a newspaper delivery service. So right. It's not as sad as it sounds. It is. Okay. When investigators start to look more closely, though, they get there immediately and they're like, this doesn't fucking look right. This is not a car accident. Mm. They're like, this is staged. So basically, she is in the driver's seat of her car, sitting stick straight up. But it's face down in a fucking, nose down in a ditch.
Ugh.
So her feet are planted on the ground. Her head is tilted back. The soda that's in the car has not spilled. Her purse hasn't even toppled over.
Oh.
So it's clearly fucking staged.
Yeah.
The car is barely damaged. And they also find a blade of grass on the bottom of her jeans, showing that at some point she had been in that grass that was in the ditch.
Oh, right.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And then the autopsy determines that she had been strangled and she also had a broken nose and a black eye. So someone staged this car accident. She also didn't have a seatbelt on and she was sitting up like that. So detective.
So that must have been so eerie.
I know.
To find that. Yeah.
So Detective Sergeant Mosley, he becomes suspicious immediately. This is not fucking right. He walks 100 yards up to her front door and he says that when her estranged husband, Steve, opens the door, he looks over at the carport and then looks down the road where this is all happening and says that his wife's not home. They told him that she was dead, that she had been strangled, and he fucking goes into a fit, starts getting upset. He throws himself on the couch crying and all this shit. But then the detective is like, when I saw his face, he wasn't crying.
Ugh.
Which I want to know, do you think it's possible to be crying without tears? Is that just impossible? It's like one of those things where it's like, you know, now we know that your reaction just might be shock or whatever. What do we call it? How we don't judge people now based.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So there's no grief expectation right. of like what you're, there's no right way to be told how your wife's been strangled to death.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I wonder, this is probably fucking medical. We could ask a doctor. Tears, like, do they always come when you're crying?
Now, I am a doctor and I should have told you this about three years ago.
Shit.
Everything I say medically is pretty dead on.
Oh, it's good to know.
I would say this as a person who, because of the way my eyes are light blue, any emotion that I feel passes through my face. Like I can't, if I get misty if I watch a video, my eyes will turn red. And even though I'm like fine, if I have the feeling, it gets shown.
I'm the opposite.
Where you're having it and nothing is
and happening. Have to be like, I would cry right now if I weren't on a ton of pharmaceuticals.
Well, so I think there are people who are on natural pharmaceuticals, i.e. being sociopaths, where they know what it looks like when someone's upset.
Right.
And they know to make those noises and sounds. But I think
especially when they murdered their wife.
Yes. But I think if you are in shock, you don't try to fake cry.
Right.
You sit there and don't have a reaction.
You don't fake anything.
You don't fake anything.
Yeah.
I think those people that cry, but there's no tears, which you see a lot these days, is just mimicry and people knowing this is what I'm supposed to do.
Right.
Now, are there people that go, I know what I'm supposed to do. And if I don't do that, I know these cops are going to think
I'm
guilty.
Because I'm in shock and I have no feelings yet.
I mean, that you should, I would hope to think that if somebody that was as close to you as your wife would be, that if you were told that they were murdered, you would either be in shock and none of that planning would be going through your head. You wouldn't be sitting there going, what does this look like to this person and all that shit. You would just be having reaction.
I think that like blacking out seems like a normal, like we were just reading because someone left in my seat back pocket that thank you very much, whoever the fuck that was.
Yes.
Maybe it was D.L. Hughley, who we saw on the plane to Albuquerque recently.
That's right. That was very exciting.
The coolest motherfucker I've ever seen in my life.
He was the coolest motherfucker. And so many people walked by his seat and said something to him.
Yes.
It was the cutest, coolest thing where you're like, oh yeah, he's a stand-up comic that's been busting his ass for years and years. He's gotten shows. He's been in movies. He's been in cool TV shows. Like it was really cool.
He just looked, and then I don't want to out him to TSA, but I noticed him first because he had this really cool hat on, like hipster cool hat, and in it was tucked a single fucking Strike Anywhere match. And I was like, A, that's the cool, like, that's just so cool.
It's so good.
B, anytime someone needs a fucking light, I bet you pull that motherfucker online it. Three, you got through TSA with a fucking Strike Anywhere match in your hat. So,
but that's when the government was shut down. So
that's
I think you know, we're lucky it was just a Strike Anywhere
match.
Right.
That's right. And it's DLQ. I mean, listen.
Yeah. Look.
Do whatever you want. Where were we? Oh, yeah. I was going to say, so the People magazine where the fucking daughter of BTK is like, here's how it happened for me. She just wrote a book. Her thing was like, she just started, when she was told that her dad was a serial killer and BTK, she just just blacked out.
Yes.
And fainted.
I bet.
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
Yeah, because how do you take that in a... your reality would just crack.
Everything.
And then you wouldn't even know where to, like...
I feel like...
know how to sit down.
That's normal for someone who loses a spouse unexpectedly.
And that they're actually connected to. But if you're not connected and you need to put on a show...
Yes.
I think that happens a lot.
Okay. So, we got through that. What are we talking? I don't know. So, the investigator, he got upset. No tears, but he was, quote, weeping. And we know a lot of this stuff because there is a trial later, although it's not what you think it is. Okay. So, Kathy, let's go back. Hey, guess what? Kathy and Steve, they had been married for 13 years. They had the two daughters, as I said. And Steve then tells authorities that recently Kathy had told him that she no longer wanted to be married to him and they were planning on separating. He said she wanted to work things out, but of course, her sister, her friends are like, she's wasn't happy for a long time. Steve slept on the couch or she slept in her daughter's room. She had recently got like a real job out of the home for the first time and was going back to school. And so she was 21. She got married and she's now 34 and she's finding herself and has friends at work. And she's fucking gorgeous too, by the way. That doesn't hurt. And Steve was, according to Kathy's sister, that they wanting to stay together was bullshit. Their marriage was over. Kathy was starting to move on. So two nights before Kathy was found, Steve had moved into a condo on his own or apartment on his own.
Okay.
So, but the night of her death, Kathy couldn't find a babysitter. She's calling around. Her sisters couldn't do it. So she called Steve and was like, can you come over and watch the girls? And she told Steve that she was meeting her friend Charlotte in Beaumont, which was like 10 minutes away, for drinks. And she left around 11:15 that night. But the autopsy shows that Kathy had sex that night. And then the authorities learned shortly before her death, she had sex. And then the authorities learned that she had not gone to meet Charlotte. In fact, Charlotte admitted that she had agreed to cover for Kathy by saying that, Charlotte, don't pick up the phone. I'm telling Steve I'm going out with you. So if you answer the phone, he'll know I'm not out with you.
Right.
And the reason is because Kathy was actually going to meet a new dude that she was dating who was staying at a hotel in Beaumont. So around 2 a.m., Charlotte, her friend, is fucking fast asleep. Her phone rings. She picks it up. It's just like, let's remember too, it's like from a time of not having cell phones.
Yes.
Your phone is blaring in the middle of the night. This poor woman, like in cold justice, she talks and she fucking obviously blames herself for this whole thing.
Oh no.
It's so sad. Answers it, immediately hears a hang up and is like, oh fuck.
Oh, no.
I just outed my friend. It's later revealed that on the piece of paper or on the phone book where Charlotte's phone number is, right underneath that was another phone number, and that was the hotel's phone number. So he probably calls Charlotte. She picks up. She's not fucking out with Charlotte. Calls the next number. It's a hotel. Knows what's going on.
Okay.
Yeah. So Okay, so the autopsy report, again, shows that Kathy had had sex that night. And they, and this is obvious, but it kind of blew my mind, that they can tell that whoever she had sex with had had a vasectomy.
Oh.
Which is obvious because there's no sperm.
Right.
But, like, I'm also like, wow.
Yes. Right? That's fascinating.
Isn't it? Her boyfriend that she was seeing hadn't had one, and he passed a polygraph with flying colors. It's definitely not him. Like, we know it's not him. So that means she had sex with another guy. Guess what? Steve had had a vasectomy a few months earlier. So, here's the thing about this case and about, Vider is that everyone on either side who thinks Steve did it or thinks he didn't agrees that the cops, the investigators, fucked this up royally.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll give you proof of that because the crime scene with the car and Kathy in it, and they take all these crime scene photos, later find out there's no film in the camera.
What?
There's no film in the fucking camera. There's not a single crime scene photo of this case.
Okay, but...
no buts. There's you can't fix this.
How? Like, even... even if it's their first week,
mm-hmm. it's like a joke I make a lot when is there film in there,
right? You know? And also a camera, like the way those, I would assume the camera I'm thinking of, the kind like that they used to use or whatever, that would have like film in it,
makes a noise.
It's also like, it sometimes you can see the yellow through the little window.
100%.
And they're definitely lighter when there's no film in them.
Yes.
Like a slightly interested photographer would be like, this isn't
right. And this goes to the other big thing, which is there's this conspiracy theory.
I'm into the conspiracy theory 100%.
Because you don't want it to
already.
Be real that someone would just forget the fucking film,
right?
But there's other things too. Like, so they go up to his door right after they find her. It's like between 4:30 and 5 in the morning. They don't bring him or the two sleeping daughters in for questioning. They don't secure the scene. They don't ask if they, I think they ask if they can come in, and he says no, because he says that other friends of mine have had evidence planted by these cops around here. So they don't get a search warrant. They don't try to get a search warrant. They don't photograph his face or hands to see if he has scratches. I mean, they don't do anything.
Yeah.
It's even if there is conspiracy theories that are true, they also were fucking incompetent.
Well, I also think it's that thing.
Or they botched this. They botched this
investigation. Because if it's a small town in Texas, they've had no experience.
That's right.
With like a murder and a murder cover up and all those things where it's like, oh no, go down to Steve.
Yeah, yeah.
That's that problem, that small town problem of like, oh, I know that guy. It's fine.
Well,
it's not him.
They both admitted later in this trial that they were acquaintances of his.
Yeah.
So they knew him.
Yes.
Which is part of the conspiracy theory. But, you know,
Just the theory.
Yeah.
I mean,
when there's no conspiracy,
yeah.
You just have theory left.
Yeah.
That's right. So then they bring Steve in like 2 days later and question him. And he's like, oh yeah, actually Kathy and I had, he volunteers it. They don't even ask him. Kathy and I had sex before she went out that night, which gives him a reason why his semen would be there.
Right.
He says that she was getting ready to go out. Again, he had moved out 2 nights before. So, how much do you want to fuck your ex who, like, you just kicked out of the house?
Right.
I mean, I've broken up with people who I kicked out and I hadn't had one sex with them for like a year.
Right.
Right?
Yes.
So he sees her in a towel coming out of the shower. He says he tries to have sex with her. She agrees. They fuck in the living room on the rug. That's his story.
Okay. Wait, where are the children? What?
I guess they're in bed already. Because it was late.
Okay.
Whatever.
I mean, look, we all also know, like, you can think of 1,000 times where you're just like, oh, I'd never fuck that person again. And then suddenly you are. So, you can rationalize so many things.
She's going to see her new hot boyfriend, too, in her hotel room.
Right. No, I know.
And maybe she's also like, if you know, he'll be suspicious unless I do this. Is it
true? I mean, there's a million ways there's a million possibilities.
Right. But, okay. So, when Kathy is found in the car, she doesn't have on makeup or jewelry. It had all been removed. But the dude she was meeting said she was in full makeup and had, like, an outfit and jewelry on when he saw her.
Mm.
So, that suggested that she had been home after visiting the dude. She left the hotel room around 2:30 in the morning. it suggests that she went home, took off, did her nighttime routine. I was listening to Southern Fried Crime, and she says this really interesting thing that I totally caught on to, which is like, you know, in every lie, there's some truth.
Yeah.
Well, Kathy's habit was to come home, take off her makeup, her jewelry, get in the shower, put up her hair and get in the shower. So Steve saying he saw her in a towel after a shower could be true. It's just later.
Yeah.
He approaches her for sex. He fucking knows she was just at a hotel because he called the number and, is blaming her for cheating on him.
Right.
Essentially.
Yes. Is just probably pissed in general.
And so the other thing is that the blood is found, blood stains are found on her underwear and skin, but not on her outer clothing, suggesting she wasn't wearing clothes when the blood happened.
Right.
So they said Kathy Page was not killed in her vehicle. She was killed at another location, cleaned up, redressed, and placed back in her vehicle after the vehicle had been rolled down the ditch. So they think he rolled the vehicle down the ditch, carried her body back in, probably put her down in the grass, which is how the grass got on her jeans.
Right.
Et cetera. And fucking in Cold Justice, they redo this because they have no photos to look at. So they reenact the whole thing of how it would go. Is that crazy?
So also, I wonder if a small town would even have a staff police photographer.
Right. No, they wouldn't.
Is it like,
there's the camera.
Go get the camera. Exactly. Yeah. Someone go get the camera. So that could be a part. But still, it just doesn't.
Yeah.
Doesn't seem right. If you know enough to take pictures of a crime scene, if you know that much.
However, I could see some 19-year-old new recruit that like take the photos and he doesn't know jack shit and just does that. You
and
know?
Also, if the flash is going off, you're like, oh, it's all happening.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. So 2 days after her body is found, it's publicly announced that Steve was the prime suspect. Steve, fucking obviously, this guy, man, he's a piece of work. And he there's an interview with him on Unsolved Mysteries, and you're just like, oh, you're referring to yourself in the third person.
No.
And all you do is say how how her death has badly affected you and your career and your, like,
no,
he's a creep.
Yeah. That's always like the 7 red flags.
Yes.
Is that kind of like, this murder has impacted my life really negatively.
These billboards that her dad put up have made, you know, it's like, which is probably true, but yeah, he's a creep. So he claims he's innocent. He says that part of the proof that he can show that he's innocent is that after Kathy was murdered, he started receiving phone calls and was threatened that the same thing would happen to him threatening him. He says that everyone knows around town that the murderer was actually a member of a prominent Italian family in Beaumont, and they're part of the Beaumont Mafia.
Oh,
did you know that Beaumont has a mafia?
Is that Sopranos season 6? I feel like I'm just getting to that season right now.
I think it's a spinoff of Sopranos.
I mean, it's possible.
No, it's not. It's not a thing.
It's like, that's the thing in Texas where if one Italian shows up, everyone's like, gather around, everybody. We got to get rid of this.
That's right. Well, yeah. And in Southern Fried Crime, she's like, I tried to Google it. And even this story doesn't come up when you Google Beaumont Mafia because it's so fucking random.
Yeah. That also sounds like something that Beaumont High School made up to call their football team or something. You know what I mean? Where it's like, we're the Beaumont Mafia and we're going to kick your ass, Lawndale.
The Goths in the Trent. Trench coat guys. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He sees like they're responsible for her death, and they're the police are framing me. Okay, so here's another couple of reasons why we think he did it. So it's obviously Kathy's family, her big family, against Steve's big family, and they contradict everything the other one said.
Yeah.
So in the very beginning, they didn't think Steve had done it yet. They weren't suspicious of him. So the minute that the family finds out about her, the parents find out about her death, he says that it's she broke her neck and it maybe was a suicide. He already knew that she had been murdered and he doesn't tell them. He also suggests that she was on cocaine. Oh. She's not.
Oh, no.
So he's fucking weird and saying some weird shit. And then also they notice that there's a square of carpet cut out in the living room, which he offers to police is where, that's the same place where they had sex that night. Remember, were they bone in the fucking living room?
Yes, but, and why? Who cut it out?
Who cut it out and why? And also says that not only did we fuck there, but there was blood, Kathy's blood on it because she liked to shave her legs in the living room. So,
well, okay.
Yes.
Somebody, at this point, if I was at the police station, I would open the door and I'd be like, dude, fucking knock it off. Knock it off. Yeah. This
go
is
to
nuts.
Jail. Go, just go get in jail.
You can't find a woman in America who shaves her legs in the motherfucking living room.
Or even if she does, have you ever bled enough on the car? Like, you don't.
Oh, was she dry shaving? What?
You know when you cut your leg and you just spurt blood all over the place?
And you just kind of stand there.
But the reason he says he got rid of the rug is because that he was carrying some fucking grease from fucking cooking fish. Fucking whoa, trips.
Ran over to the spot where he has sex with his wife.
Spilled it there.
Ugh.
I mean, there's just, you pick one reason and he gave them all.
It was the Bermuda Triangle of their carpet.
That's right. And so he got rid of it. He also never would let the cops in. He burns that fucking piece of carpet. He burns everything that he allegedly said he tried to clean it, and her family said that they saw his family trying to clean that spot too.
Good God.
Yeah. And they're all no, that didn't happen.
Also, anytime you're entering into a burn area, you're in dangerous right. waters, because the usually the innocent don't need to go burn stuff in the backyard.
Absolutely. Although you and some of the people taught me, I'm from Orange County, which is suburbia, that burning trash in a backyard is a normal thing.
Very much so. But you can only do it on a burn day.
Yeah,
so please call your comptroller and find out when the burnings are allowed.
My favorite murder is, if there's anything we're against, it's unlawful burning of trash.
Civics are key. Everyone.
We're running for mayor of your city.
when we learn to pronounce it.
That's right. So the other thing that was fucking creepy and weird is that all of Kathy's watches have disappeared. All of them. So, and that didn't happen until after it was discovered that she hadn't been wearing any jewelry that night when she was found. Mm-hmm. She had come home and taken off all her jewelry. Steve was probably like, I don't know which fucking watch she was wearing. Let's put them all out of here.
Yeah.
And Kathy's sister says that she, right after the murder, saw Steve give his creepy, weird lawyer friend, which they talked to in Cold Justice, a manila envelope. He passes it off to him. It was bulky and it made a metallic sound. And Steve said that there was candy in it. So whatever jewelry she's wearing that night, he probably put in a manila envelope, gave it to his fucking creepy ass lawyer friend who's going to cover him.
Better Call Saul style lawyer.
Exactly. He's Joe DeRosa's character. The fucking
the vet. He gives people, does surgery on people.
That's right.
Also, yeah, this guy seems like he's not only lies all the time, but is terrible at it.
Yeah. Can I tell you the worst thing he did? I was going to save it, but like when I saw him there's a video of in Cold Justice. I'm sure there's a video that Steven can stay up till 3 a.m. finding. I'm kidding, Steven. Please. Because you know that's like what it's so, like 9 o'clock right
it's
now.
It's so flippant. And I it's know. Like Steven's reality. We're like the worst college class he's ever had to like cram for. Listen, every Wednesday night.
Steven, we should Tuesday. Let you know we're working on a new website where this stuff exists so you don't have to make it.
Steven.
It's true.
We are working on artificial intelligence, Steven, where you won't even have to talk to us anymore.
Listen, your brain in Elvis's head. Just
Steven,
think about it.
Steven, why do you fight? Us helping you by making you do more work all the time.
Here's the video. And it is one of the most...
Here's the video Steven's going to shoot for you.
He's going to reenact it tonight. I'm going to need a reenactment of this. It takes place in the daytime, but look, Steven, figure it out.
We'll do it. Night shoot.
Yeah, lights. Okay, so Kathy's family started noticing that at her gravestone, flowers were strewn. Someone was fucking around with all the shit that they were leaving on their lovely daughter and sister's gravestone.
Mm-mm.
So they hire a fucking private detective. He goes and hides in the fucking bushes or whatever, videotaping. And here comes Steve and he punts the flowers on her gravestone.
Jesus.
So angrily and hard. I had to pause it.
It freaked you out.
It's an angry fucking person who's angry that she was fucking someone that night.
And also who's so psychotic that her being dead isn't enough.
Not enough. It's like he still can't be like, yeah, it's crazy. Wow. They have video of it. So he claims it's because, you know, he was mad at her family or they were putting plastic flowers on it and he didn't like it.
Sure.
But then they also show him scratching some shit into the fucking gravestone. He gets down on his knees and fucking scratches. Like, it's insane.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's so troubling. So,
well, and also just the consistent lying. It's when people just constantly lie and lie to your face, do one thing and then are like, I'm not doing that.
Yeah, I never told that person. Like, the person's there and they're like, I swear he told me that.
Yeah.
I'm not the liar.
Right.
But you can't, if you say I'm not the liar, you sound like a liar.
You're such a liar.
When I'm not.
But I'm not the liar.
I swear. It's that thing of like, if there was a clone of you and that looked exactly like you and they were like, I'm the real Georgia.
Yes.
You'd seem like the fake Georgia because you'd be freaking the fuck out.
Yep.
In my mind, listen.
But then you know what I would do? Here's how you'd know I'm not the clone.
I know how.
Say it.
You'd say, I don't give a shit. Is that right?
No. Is that? I mean, that's not what I was going to say, but it's exactly
right. I'm right, right?
Fine. She can be.
I don't even care. I'm going to go, I don't even fucking care.
I was going to say, if you show me like a duck being friends with a goat, you'll see my eyes go red and then you'll know that that's me.
All right. I'm going to do next. If that ever happens, I'm going to know to do both.
It's so much better though. I don't care. She can talk to the clone. She'll do it better.
Let her have it.
Talk to the clone.
I don't give a shit. Okay, so about the conspiracy shit. Kathy's family thinks there's a conspiracy with the police and the district attorney that they've been covering for Steve and they've let him get away with murder. It's common knowledge apparently that Steve's parents are close with the chief of police in Vidor, but at the same time it like doesn't really explain it completely. Another theory that I heard from Southern
Fried chicken.
Thank you.
Southern fried crime.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Is that the dude that she, her boyfriend that she was hooking up with might have actually been a prominent citizen from the town. And in order to not, because we don't know his name, in order to not, you know, get it publicized, they just kind of shoved the whole case under the rug.
Right.
No fucking film. They think that no film in the camera was a conspiracy, as you do. And it also took the police 3 years to convince the district attorney to issue a search warrant for the home.
What?
Yes. 3 years.
Okay, well, then that is a even in the...
Yes.
It's a conspiracy simply because there's the, what was it called? It's the due diligence or like, yes. You have to do things in a timely manner.
Totally.
Is that just court cases or like, it seems to me investigating life. Things. Yeah.
It's like all of us.
You can't just not do your job when there's a woman has been killed and children have been, had their mother taken away.
Right. That's, yes, all of it.
That's disgusting.
And I hate to fucking spoil, I spoiler alert you at the end of fucking Cold Justice. The Kathy Siegler is a fucking monster. Like I would not fuck with her. She's amazing. And even she can't fucking get them to get an arrest warrant for him. And she gets so much information that he against him that it, she, oh, okay.
You got to see it.
I have two more pages and I'm like, okay. So when this happens, it takes 3 years to get the search warrant. So Kathy's father, James Fulton, is like, I can't fucking deal with you people anymore. He owns some land by the I-10 and he's like, watch me, bitch.
Yeah.
He puts up all these billboards. Previous versions included, quote, and this is huge and you can see it online. I believe my daughter was raped while she was being strangled to death. Vidor police botched up the case and also one that said this could happen to you. I think I already said that.
Yeah.
Another declared this is Orange County. It's their Texas Orange County, not mine. City of Vidor, here you get by with brutally murdering a woman. The current sign put up in like 2012 or 2014 includes a picture of both Steve and Kathy. And it says, Steve Page brutally murdered his wife in 1991. Oh. Vidor PD does not want to solve this case. I believe they took a bribe. The attorney general should investigate. Signed, James Bolton, her father.
Holy shit.
Like, this guy's not fucking around. And some people are like not into these signs.
Right.
At all. And obviously Steve took the daughters, moved out of town pretty quickly. But then they kind of grew up after that as orphans because he shacked up with a married woman and sent them to his sister. They had to end up living with his grandparents. I mean, it's really sad.
Yeah.
But in 2000, Kathy's family sued Steve in civil court for wrongful death. The civil jury found that there was a preponderance of evidence that Steve killed his wife.
Wow.
So they, that quote, found Steve Page killed Kathy Page. And Steve was found financially liable for Kathy's death, and the verdict was upheld on appeal, which is big. He was ordered to pay $200,000 to her family.
Wow.
He was also convicted and fined and given probation for the desecration of her grave. Yeah. So he's now 61. He lives in Texas. He's yet to be charged criminally for her murder. His daughters were sent to live with family. They became estranged from him. And sadly, the younger daughter, I don't want to say their names, but you can find it online. She died of a prescription drug overdose in 2011 at the age of 27.
Oh, it's terrible.
I mean, it's case remains open. And the father has spent more than $200,000 himself on billboards since the early 90s.
Wow.
On his own land. He's now 86. Kathy's mother, Dorothy, died in 2012 without ever having a closure on this. Kathy's father says that, quote, "This is my priority until my death, to try and get something done. It's not over with yet. I'm fixing to do a whole lot more than what I've already done." And the surviving sister, who has a blog about this, she wrote about it. She hated the billboards. And she said, quote, "To me, this billboard is not about my mother. It is about two stubborn, selfish men with too much guilt to carry."
Oh.
And that is the true story of three billboards outside of Ebbing, Missouri.
Wow. So the daughter basically feels like the billboards aren't, that's just, it's more about their fight as opposed to
finding who did this.
Finding who did it.
Yeah. So it's, I wanted to end on his quote because it's like, yeah, go get him. But the daughter's the most innocent victim here, and it's not doing anything for her.
Well, and also we know his point of view because we're getting the billboards say it. He's taken that action,
right.
But she's the one that is directly impacted, and her point of view is as important.
Yeah.
And it is, I mean, what do you do though? It's like, what a terrible position where it feels like the only recourse that you have is putting up signs on your land.
Totally.
That says this hasn't gotten taken care of.
Well, at the end of the school justice episode, you're just like, yeah, like that's all there is to do because no one is fucking listening and no one will do anything about this.
Right.
I mean, wow. They brought the case to the district attorney and he refused to take it on.
Was it the same guy from when it happened? Like,
don't know.
Oh, sorry.
All right, I don't know.
Remember. Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, bananas, right?
Yes, so good. Well, mine is one that I considered doing when we were in San Diego. Uh-huh. But it's so awful that I didn't want to do it for a live show because it's just terrible. I mean, obviously, everything we talk about is terrible.
Of course.
But this is, it's not only, you know, incredibly terrible, but I remember this. This is one of those baseline on TV, on the news crimes that nobody could believe. Like when it happened, people talked about it and freaked out about it. And it was just in the air, and it happened when I was 14. So I have a very strong memory of it.
When your mind is grasping onto these fucked up things.
Right. And it was the San Ysidro McDonald's mass shooting.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
So there's a documentary called 77 Minutes that is all about it and about the survivors' experience. There's a lot of survivors that speak in it and stuff. And so if you want to know more, most of the information I have is like straight up Wikipedia. But watch that documentary if you want to know, get the real inside scoop, because there are survivors that were inside.
Mm-hmm.
And that speak about it. And it's also one of those things. There was a time in this country, you know, where this never happened.
Nope.
And people had no idea even how to respond. They didn't know what it was.
I mean, it's so sad now that you think that there are people in the generation below us. I mean, barely. I'm so young.
Yeah.
That think that public shootings is a normal thing when really it's really in the past for me, like 10 years.
Right.
You know, when Columbine was this fucking insane thing that happened and never ever happened as far as we knew. And now it's like the norm.
Exactly.
And we shouldn't let it be normal.
I feel like, you know, people say that a lot, like on social media, like don't normalize this and don't. And I always want to say back, It's not that. This country's in crisis, and there's so much terrible stuff happening every day. You can't be reacting to everything all the time. You go crazy.
Yeah. And so it's like we don't have, you see the next thing in 10 minutes. It's not like you have 3 days of news coverage to absorb it.
Exactly. And mean? Sometimes
okay, that makes
sense. Sometimes the next thing in 10 minutes is another shooting.
Right.
And I think that's that thing. Like you heard about there's the guy that walked into the bank and shot five women yeah. execution style. And that as you're processing that, then there's another.
Shoot this fucking couple that killed all the cops in Houston.
That's right. Five policemen.
That's insane.
Are dead. Then like immediately yeah. you'll hear about that day where, you know, then 15 people were murdered on the south side of Chicago and no one ever talks about those.
And then people are like, don't talk about it because it makes the killer want the notoriety.
Yes.
And so then you're making it. Oh God.
It's insanity.
It's insanity.
It's insanity. And we need gun control in this country.
Yeah.
And we've needed it. Since the 80s.
Just some rules. We need some fucking background check. The same kind of background check you'd need if you got a fucking abortion or if you got a fucking driver's license.
Yeah.
Basic shit.
Just some basics. But, you know, that's more of a political
gridlock. That's not
gridlock
this podcast.
Okay. I just mean it like if it were, I think change is coming because I think the children who are being directly affected by this are taking action in ways that we aren't. I've never had to do a shooting drill at school. So there are people that are being affected by it who are young and angry, who aren't going to just go, oh, that's terrible.
Yeah.
Because it's happening to them.
Amazing.
And those people combined with the people who are in, underserved communities
yes.
where gun violence is like de rigueur and who are like, we're just being murdered out here and no one's helping us. I think it's like the wave of that coming together.
Yeah. The people who are
is affecting
trying
change.
To live their lives.
Yeah.
It's yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. So let's just go all the way down to bad town. All right. James Huberty was born in Canton, Ohio on October 11th, 1942. He had polio when he was 3 years old. He had difficulty walking for the rest of his life. In the early 50s, his dad moved them to a Pennsylvania Amish country. So the mother, when that happened, she was like, I'm not moving there. Mm. So she left the family to go preach for a Southern Baptist organization, which of course affected James terribly. And he becomes withdrawn. He gets married in 1965, to a woman named Etna. They have two daughters. He becomes a welder in his hometown, Canton, Ohio. They settle down there, but there's lots of strife in the house, domestic violence. Etna and James don't get a divorce ever though, but it's pretty bad.
Mm-hmm.
Then James gets into a motorcycle accident where he has a permanent arm injury and his arm twitches uncontrollably. So, he can no longer be a welder. Yeah, so he loses his job. He becomes a security guard. For a little while, the family, and this is like the darkest, they relocate to Tijuana, Mexico. Mm-hmm. So obviously things are going badly.
Yeah.
But they come back and settle in the San Ysidro neighborhood, of near San Diego. He gets a job as a security guard, but then he loses that job. As a security guard, he's depressed over that. But he also is a gun nut. So there are stories, his daughters had friends that would come over to the house and they said there would be guns just laying out on the kitchen table, that he was often playing with a switchblade.
Uh-uh.
There was just a lot of like violent, overt, violent behavior
yeah.
going on all the time. And then on top of that, so on July 17th, 1984, James tells his wife, Etna, that he thinks he has mental problems, that he thinks he needs to talk to somebody. Mm. And you have to think of it in 1984, that there was a huge social stigma, like even admitting it, I'm sure, to your wife was a huge deal.
And they're from the Midwest, which is like bootstraps, fucking yes. central.
Yeah. Nobody needs help. How dare you need help?
Yeah.
And yeah, and for somebody like this guy who clearly like he wants to problem solve by killing things. If you
right.
create a problem, if you threaten me, if you make me mad, I'm going to pull my gun out.
Yeah.
So the idea that he would then say, I have mental issues and I need help, is a very big deal. So he, on July 17th, he calls a mental health clinic and asks for an appointment. He leaves his contact details with the receptionist, and she assures him that someone is going to return his call within the next hour or two. Mm. So he sits next to the phone and waits for that return call. And his wife said he waited for a couple hours.
Oy vey.
The call never comes. He gets up, walks out of the house, gets on a motorcycle, and drives away. So
listen, I don't want to blame things, because a lot of people have had that happen to them and they don't do this stuff.
Yes, exactly.
But it's fucked up. I mean, it's a crazy...
So here's what happened. Okay. The receptionist misspelled his last name as Schuberty. And because he was so polite and did not seem he was in immediate crisis.
Yeah.
She logged the call as a non-crisis inquiry, and that it would be handled within 48 hours.
Ooh.
So her time frame, she didn't really communicate the correct time frame to him.
I mean, yeah.
And in his mind, clearly he was at the end of his rope, but she interpreted the call and his behavior as basically check in on this person.
Right.
So he comes home from that motorcycle ride an hour later and the wife says he seems fine. They have dinner. The whole family rides bikes to the nearby park. Later on, they come home. The kids go to bed. Etna and James watch a movie. It's like normal life. The next morning is Wednesday, July 18th. James Huberty takes his wife and their daughters to the San Diego Zoo. And they're having just like a lovely day. And all of a sudden, he turns to Etna and says, I think my life's over. And she basically gets him to say he's so angry that the mental health clinic didn't return his phone call. And he says to her, well, society had their chance.
Oh, that's not fair.
Right. They go to a McDonald's for lunch that day after the zoo, the McDonald's in Claremont, which is where the tank rampage took place.
Yeah.
This is all like in the same neighborhood.
Shit.
Then they go home. So later that afternoon, he walks into the bedroom and he kisses his wife saying, I want to kiss you goodbye. And she asks where he's going.
God.
And he says, I'm going hunting for humans.
What the
Then he walks.
Fuck?
Yeah. He walks out of the house. On his way out the door, he says goodbye to his daughter and says, like explicitly says to her, I won't be back. And leaves.
Oh my God.
So at approximately 3:56 p.m., same day, James Huberty drives his black Mercury Marquis sedan into the parking lot of the McDonald's on San Ysidro Boulevard. He's wearing camouflage pants and a black t-shirt, and he is carrying a 9mm Browning HP semi-automatic pistol, a 9mm Uzi carbine, a Winchester 1200 12-gauge pump action shotgun.
Jesus.
And then he's got a cloth bag filled with the ammunition. There are 50 people in the restaurant, roughly. Oh, so yeah. It is a busy afternoon, and that McDonald's is busy.
Yeah.
Because there's customers and full employees, full staff, obviously. He walks in, he yells, freeze. He aims his shotgun at 16-year-old employee John Arnold. Right before he does that, the assistant manager, Guillermo Flores, shouts, hey, John, that guy's going to shoot you. So John Arnold turns around and James Huberty is standing there and shoots, and the shotgun doesn't go off. So then John Arnold thinks it's some awful prank where he's like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah.
And as Huberty's looking at his gun, the manager, 22-year-old Neva Kane, and this is the saddest part. It's all teenagers, of course. It's a McDonald's in the 80s. It's all teenagers working there, or like very young people.
Yeah.
So Neva Kane is the manager, and she walks over like, hey, what's going on? She's walking toward the service counter. And that's when James Huberty starts firing the Uzi, and he murders Neva Kane right there. And then as he does that, then he unjams his shotgun and shoots John Arnold in the chest.
Jesus.
He yells for everyone to get down on the ground. He's calling them dirty swines. And he's shouting that he's killed thousands and he intends to kill thousands more. A lot of people interpret that as thinking he is a Vietnam veteran.
Yeah.
But afterwards, they find out he'd never had any military service.
So what does that mean?
But I think he was just trying to be scary and maybe seem like that kind of person. Like, I have a bunch of experience with this.
Intimidate everyone.
Right. But yeah, that is not the case. 25-year-old Victor Rivera. So he just begins shooting up the place. And at one point after the screaming and it's basically clear that he's basically, I hate all of the people in this building and I'm going to kill you all. A 25-year-old man named Victor Rivera begins to plead with him not to harm anybody else. And James Huberty turns around and shoots Victor Rivera 14 times and kills him.
Oh my God.
So this is the massacre beginning, and it goes on. It's so terrible, and it goes on for so long, and it's just the worst case scenario in every way. Mm-hmm. Starting with, and this is tragic and awful, because so he started roughly around almost right before 4, and so maybe like a minute or two before 4 p.m.
Okay.
By 4 p.m., there's all these calls coming into 911 or to emergency services, and the dispatcher mistakenly directs all the police to the wrong McDonald's.
No.
That's 2 miles from, so there's two within two miles of each other, and they just give the wrong one.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah. So since the police aren't there to lock the scene down for a while, James Huberty is inside this McDonald's shooting, and people are walking
coming in,
pulling into the drive-thru. Oh. Okay, so a woman named Lydia Flores pulls into the drive-thru. She notices shattered windows. She hears the sound of gunfire before looking up, and she says, looking up, and there he was just shooting. She reverses her car out of the drive-thru, crashes into a fence with her 2-year-old fucking child. Her 2-year-old daughter hides in the car until the shooting stops.
Oh my God.
So she basically pulls up to it and then gets away, crashes, and then just hides.
Holy shit.
This is the most tragic. And there was actually a picture in the newspaper. This story was so huge for so long. It still gives me chills.
What year was it again?
84.
Okay. Because I didn't know about it until I got older because I was a kid, but I'm sure my mom would remember it.
Yes. And there was a picture that I bet you she remembers, because three little boys rode up on their bikes. And the bikes and basically Omar Hernandez, Joshua Coleman, and David Delgado rode up while an intermittent shooting was taking place. So they rode their bikes up, dropped them outside, went in, and were immediately shot. They weren't even in the building. And he shot, and Omar Hernandez and David Delgado died at the scene. Joshua Coleman somehow miraculously survives after being shot in the back, in the arm, and in the leg.
Holy shit.
He says he saw his friends murdered. He throws up. He's there, and there is a picture, you guys can go find, but like of the bikes on the ground, and then there's like an EMT with that little boy.
Oh my!
And it's such a miracle that he survived. But this is just the beginning of this massacre. It's just so awful. Again, because there's no police there, no one's locking anything down. An elderly couple is walking in, Miguel Uola and his wife, Aida, are walking in. Miguel's 74, Aida's 69. They're walking in, and right as Miguel opens the door for Aida, Huberty turns around with his shotgun and shoots her. Miguel starts screaming at him, of course, and then he gets shot too. So everybody sees that. It's just fucking like chaos. Worst case scenario. People in the restaurant, of course, have hidden under tables. Yeah. There are people that are like shot and have dragged themselves into the bathroom. You know, it's crazy, and everyone's on the ground. And it just keeps going. So the shooting just keeps going.
Why isn't anyone there? Why aren't the cops here? Why isn't anyone stopping this person? Why isn't?
Yes.
You know,
it's a nightmare.
I'm sure that's what they're thinking. I'm not asking that. I'm sure that's what they're thinking.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
And that the people in, he's clearly, you can't talk to him. You You can't reason no. with him. You can't even be seen.
No.
So, and that gets established very early on.
Right.
So when the officers finally do arrive, they set up a 6-block lockdown perimeter. Mm-hmm. There's 175 officers that end up at the scene. Mm-hmm. They set up a command post 2 blocks away. And of course, a SWAT team quickly follows. Mm-hmm. Thank God. Mm-hmm. But the problem is there's so much gunfire. They think there's a bunch of people yeah. shooting up the inside of the McDonald's.
Shit.
And he shot out, because he has an Uzi.
Yeah.
He shot out so many windows that they can't see into the windows are shattered, cracked. But they're like, yeah. yeah, they can't see in. So they can't get a clear view. They can't get a sense of what's going on. It's crazy. Okay. So at one point, and several survivors say that they saw Huberty walk toward the service counter at one point, adjust a portable radio. He brought a radio in. He was trying to hear on the news what was going on, how close the cops were.
Oh my God.
And then he put it on a music station and returned to shooting.
Yeah. I mean, let's remember real quick back to when he left the house. This is a father of two
yes.
children.
Yeah.
A husband. Like, suddenly now he's this military psychopath in my head, but it's like the kids he just shot outside the fucking restaurant could be his kids. Like,
yes.
This isn't some fucking... That's insane.
Yes. It's insanity. And he knew he was going insane. He reached out for help. And then it's almost kind of that thing of like, I think we've all been in that, you're most vulnerable and you ask for help. And if you get rejected,
yeah,
like that makes a person never ask for anything again.
Yeah. That, but it's that thing of like, but then most of those people don't go kill a bunch of innocent people.
Of course like, not. But then there'll be a little bit of a, there's other things at play.
Let's hear it.
But you're right. I mean, like, this isn't, it's almost like culturally, it's as if like, oh, here's the solution. Are you upset? Have you been rejected? Are you mad at women? Are you mad at people that don't look exactly like you? Mm-hmm. Well, then here's what you can do about it. Here's mm-hmm. an Uzi. Here's a fucking shotgun, whatever.
Yeah.
That's like, there are people who, that's their belief system.
And they have access to those weapons.
Yeah. Finally, at 5:17 p.m.
So it's 4 o'clock is when he fucking started. And it's been an
77
hour.
Minutes. The documentary is called 77 minutes because it's an hour and 17 minutes.
Holy cunt. That is insane.
It's horrifying. But they get up on to the post office that's across the street that has an unobstructed view into the McDonald's. And for 1 second, Huberty appears in this guy's scope. He can see it's basically just his head. And so he takes the shot and fires a single round. And he shoots Huberty in the chest. He sends him sprawling backwards onto the floor in front of the service counter and kills him instantly.
Good.
So, as I said, the incident lasted 77 minutes, during which time James Huberty fired a minimum of 245 rounds of ammunition. He killed 21 people and wounded many, many others. The victims, whose ages ranged from 8 months to 74 years, were predominantly, not exclusively, but predominantly Mexican or Mexican-American,
yeah.
which is obviously the racial element behind that and clearly part of this this man's either agenda or insanity, whatever it might be.
Totally.
So the victims were Claudia Perez, who was 9 years old. Elise Herlinda Borboa Firo, who was 19. Jose Ruben Lozano Perez, who was 19. Neva Denise Kane, the manager, who was 22. Mm-hmm. Michelle Deanne Carncross, who was 18. Mm-hmm. Carlos Reyes, who was 8 months old. Mm-hmm. Maria Elena Colmerno Silva, who was 19. Jackie Lynn Wright Reyes, who was 18. Gloria Lopez Gonzalez, who was 22. Victor Maximilian Rivera, who's 25. Aris Delcy Vargas, who was 31. Blythe Reagan Herrera, who was 31. Hugo Luis Velasquez Vasquez, who was 45. Mateo Herrera was 11. Paulina Aquino Lopez, who was 21. Lawrence Herman Verslewis was 62. Margarita Padilla was 18.
Oh my God.
David Flores Delgado was 11. Omar Alonso Hernandez was 11. Miguel Victoria Loa was 75, was 74, mm-hmm. and Aida Loa was 69. Mm. Five of the dead were under 11 years old. In 1986, this shooting was the deadliest mass murder in the United States until 1991. Mm-hmm. Now, and as we know, now it happens much more often. Afterwards, in 1986, Edna Huberty, people were very upset because she got money from the victims'
right.
Fund, which she was a victim to. It's understandable that people are upset.
It's so hard.
There's nothing about this that isn't the worst yeah. scenario where like there's no nothing, there's no winners, there's nothing good. I know, it's all deep tragedy.
It's so hard to like find your humanity, your own humanity when someone has fucking just stomped all over it,
yes.
you know?
And yes.
It's so hard.
Yes.
But
in
know.
The face
but
of-
we know we need to feel it and have yes. it or else we're you know, that's the problem with people is they who do shit like this is they have no fucking humanity.
That's right.
So we need to make sure that we pay attention to ours.
And keep it. Yes, exactly. And hold it and know, understand that that's that part of it. But it's like, but if you're super close, like a victim's fund
totally.
Situation, it's just, it's not
I
good.
Totally understand.
In 1986, so of course there was a million lawsuits about this because of that amount of time that no one came.
Yeah.
There were people running out and going, please someone help us. Like it was the worst. And like all the, you know, the police were, it must have been absolutely horrifying because it's a SWAT team that they're like, we can't get a shot. Yeah. We don't know what to do. Yeah. They just, it was not well handled.
All you can do is like, what could have changed and what could have been better about this?
I mean, cause you would think, or you might want to argue that they should storm into the McDonald's,
right?
But there's so much gunfire. They think there could be five yeah. people in there. They don't know what's happening and they
yeah.
can't see it.
Yeah.
Even still though, it's such a long time. It's horrifying.
It's so long.
So there was so many lawsuits, just every direction. But interestingly, Edna Huberty unsuccessfully tried to sue McDonald's and Babcock and Wilcox, which was her husband's longtime former employer, in an Ohio state court for $5 million. The suit claimed that the massacre was triggered by both a poor diet.
No.
And her husband working around highly poisonous metals, further citing that monosodium glutamate in McDonald's food combined with the high levels of lead and cadmium that were discovered in Huberty's body at his autopsy.
They were.
Wait. He was a welder. And so he had a ton of heavy metals and bad toxic shit in his system. Basically, They think the buildup from the fumes that he inhaled during his 14 years of welding at Babcock and Wilcox had induced delusions and uncontrollable rage. Here's the thing, as we say, but well, then why aren't all the welders doing it?
Right.
Because no.
Yeah.
The autopsy did reveal there were no drugs or alcohol in James's system.
Which almost, does that freak you out sometimes? Like, yes. I want to see massive amounts of amphetamine. So I'm like, okay, great.
Exactly.
There's none.
Right. Because they're all in his brain.
Right. Because you know what? Sometimes, like, this is the argument, is fucking people have chemical imbalances.
Right.
It's not simple.
No.
You know?
No. And it's the thing of, like, when I think in that position, the tragedy, of course, is that he wanted to get help. He gave them basically 2 hours yeah. and then that yeah. was it.
Let's not give him too much credit for that, though.
Yeah, not at all. But I will say this is he basically had this, whether it was because he was a welder or because he had, you know, the sad life that he did have before, whatever yeah, fuck
yeah.
it was.
Yeah.
You can't just, that idea that, well, I made that one phone call, now I go get to kill everybody is just, I don't even know why
it's
I'm
Ted
saying
Bundy.
This.
It's the same thing with fucking Ted Bundy and yes. all my notes about you fucking being, he's not a, you know, there's scared little men who has violent tantrums. Mm-hmm. That's all, he has a violent tantrum.
Right.
You know,
right.
or like he feels little and you know what fucking helps is killing women or shooting people.
Yeah.
It makes me feel bigger.
Right.
Or it makes just me feel out of control.
This is how I teach everybody a lesson because I've been hurt or
I've
rejected
wrong.
Or fired yeah. or whatever
yes.
it is.
Yes. Does something good come out of this? Any laws?
One of the victims became a San Diego policeman.
Amazing.
And this, and if you watch this documentary, I haven't watched the entire thing, but that it has all the people telling their story, the way it's affected their life, the impact it's had on their life, of course, which is very bad. But it's also that kind of thing of like, this is the more these kinds of stories get out where it's, this is what happens when you're on this side of it.
Right.
That it, we should prevent this, not because it's a political argument or because I believe this or I wear this color hat or whatever.
100%.
It's you decimate 50 people's lives in 10 minutes when you walk in somewhere with an Uzi and bad metals in your brain or a grudge or whatever the problem is.
Well, it's when my mom and I were arguing loudly at a nice pizza restaurant about gun control over white wine, as you do.
As one does.
Her argument of anyone should be able to have guns in their house and all this shit. And her 6-year-old grandson, I'm saying to her, if he went on a play date, would you really want the person he's going over to their house to have, an assault rifle in their fucking house?
Right.
Are you okay with that? Would you let them do that? Because it's their fucking right, quote unquote.
Right.
No. And she fucking couldn't answer that.
Of course.
Because it's insane. It's like, it's great and everything is fine until it's you and it's happening to your life. And you need to put yourself and have some basic fucking empathy and put yourself in the shoes of the people who survived it and the families whose loved one didn't survive it.
This wasn't supposed to be a gun lecture. Also, we're preaching to the converted so hard right now.
I know.
But anyway, I mean,
maybe we're not, and that's important too. Or maybe people who don't vote are listening because they don't like to get out of their house on that day.
Maybe.
Or are undecided. It's important.
Yeah, let's have less violence. Also, just this one, just having seen it from, like, we used to just watch the news at night. Mm-hmm. And so whatever was on the news just went straight into my brain. Yeah. And the night this happened, it had this really intense ripple effect on this country in a way that, like, things didn't that much back then because there was no social media and there was no whatever. It was intense. It was crazy. And it's really sad.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Well, you told that well.
Thank
shit,
you.
Shit, girl. Shit. I'm going to touch that shit.
Shit, dude. I know.
But you did good. No, but you did a great job.
I just wanted it. It felt like one of those things. It's
yeah.
It feels like one of those ones where you're just like, but it should get said.
Right. And maybe especially because it's of a underrepresented group or the majority who got killed.
Yes.
It's important to tell that story.
Yes, for sure.
And shit. I mean,
yeah.
Good job.
Thank you.
Now let's never do the Hi-Fi murders.
Oh, God. Jesus.
That's so one that I will never, ever do. Yeah, that was great.
Okay, so what's your fucking hooray for this week?
Okay, so my fucking hooray, I'm seeing a new therapist.
Nice.
She's great. I was talking to her about my self-esteem and how fucking hard it is to read one negative comment on Instagram amidst a ton of the kindest, murderinos overall and people who comment on my answer, like the kindest people. I can't get over it. If I could cry, I would. and one will affect me so negatively and make like such a bummer. So she was like, well, you know what you should try? And I was like, oh God, what is she going to tell me to meditate? And she said, recently I started watching Cardi B's videos on Instagram. And yes. I was like, oh, I I'm so bad with pop culture. I've heard of her. I know that story, kind of ideas. I don't know the music. So I was like, okay, this is weird. And I went home and fucking watched a couple Cardi B videos.
I do. What I like, I do, I do.
Oh my
I do.
God.
What I like, I do, I
That's
do.
That's the little noise she makes. I am so in love with Cardi B. She's and her fucking Instagram videos.
The best.
And her as a person, It's incredible.
She's the best. Did you see the speech she gave about how the government needs and
because of your pussy?
Yes,
like, you go to
check your pussy.
Check your pussy.
Somebody remixed that song that into a song that's amazing. It's on my Twitter feed if you want to see it. And one of my favorite comedians, who's now writing on SNL, Bowen Yang, he does this thing where he does lip syncs of those kinds of speeches. So he did one from Devil Wears Prada.
Oh my god.
He does these, they're really good videos, and he did hers like word for word, gesture for gesture, reenacting it. It's so funny.
Can I give a shout out to someone else that I know who does that, who's amazing, that does that with like movies? So he does like a lot of, he'll do like a Parker Posey fucking monologue and shit, and he's amazing. And I've been meaning to fucking talk about him. Hold on. It's the Johnny Smith, and he does Johnny lip sync. The hashtag is Johnny Lip Sync, and he'll do these to these fucking insane old movies like Postcards from the Edge and shit, and just, he's crying.
I love it.
But yeah, Cardi B, I'm inspired by her. You know how many fucks she gives?
Zero.
I'm just so, I'm amazed, and I wanna channel Cardi B.
She has one of my favorite lines in any song ever, any lyric.
Mm-hmm.
She says, the only time that I'm a ladies when I ladies hose to rest. She has, there's so much, her rhymes. I'm not going to talk about rap like I fucking know anything, but
clever.
So good. And also, but also just like,
let's go see her.
Let's go see her, and let's go see Lizzo. Yes. Lizzo is going on tour in April. This is,
spell her name so everyone,
Lizzo.
She, oh my God, she's got our like backstage before we go on stage in the green room anthem. Like, this is our gal who we fucking listen to and sing as we're walking towards the stage.
Yes.
What's the song called? Do it.
I do my hair, but
check my name.
Good as hell. Okay. The song's called Good as Hell. Okay. I've tweeted it a ton of times.
Okay, great.
She also has a new song called Juice that's incredible.
Great.
She's like hitting the big time now.
Yes.
She's doing Coachella. She's doing a bunch of stuff.
She plays the flute.
She plays the flute and hits the chute. She is the fucking shit.
I love her so much.
She's the shit. And also she has that thing where her lyrics are really like,
they're empowering.
They're really like, sorry, let me just remember this one because I just texted this. So here's, this will be, as I try to remember that, I'll say this.
Steven, we stay up till 5 a.m. editing.
Steven.
This is so we sound smart.
I'm so sorry. No, you can leave that part in, but my therapist gave me this assignment. I've started going to therapy twice a week now.
I love it.
And it feels amazing because I talk so fucking much. And can't, I have to monologue at her. I don't like the feeling when we're like staring at each other.
Back
and she's like,
and forth.
Yeah, let's feel that for a second.
So how does that make you feel?
So it's almost like there's the download, I was going to say episode, appointment.
No, it's an episode.
Espionage.
Well, we're going to start putting Karen's therapy sessions out as a podcast.
Everyone would roll their eyes the hardest.
Yes. And listen to it.
But, so it's like the first day I kind of barf out all things that I'm worried about.
Yeah.
And then we get to like workshop it for a whole nother day.
Whenever I hear people who go to therapy more than once a week, I'm like, you're doing the fucking work.
Yeah.
Because your therapist said to you, you need to come in more than once a week, which makes you think, oh shit. I'm fucking crazy.
Yes.
Like I knew a dude who went 3 times a week.
Yeah, hell yeah.
And it's like, all you're doing is the work you need to be doing.
Well, and it's, I am so, as we all are, we all have anxiety. We're all stressed out. Mm-hmm. We're all scared. We all have these issues.
And there's like basic, obvious reasons that have nothing to do with having a chemical imbalance.
No.
Like just fucking start with.
Right. It's the way we're built to have anxiety. I just read this somewhere. We are all the human beings that lived because we have anxiety.
Right.
We stayed away from the fucking saber-tooth tiger's cave and
Don't touch the fire, you ding dong.
We ran into the forest so that we wouldn't get killed and then didn't.
And then we survived. And then now we stay out of the forest because there's serial killers in there. Like we have to find out which way we go in the forest.
That's right.
In or out.
But we're filled with anxiety that we now societally interpret as a negative, which it's not necessarily.
Right.
You're not crazy. It's natural. It's how our reptilian brains are built.
I also think it makes me kind of like quirky and fun. A little bit, you know?
Also, you love cats.
I love cats.
But she gave me this exercise. And she said, every day you have to write down five things, not that you're grateful for, because that's conceptual. Mm. Write down five things that made you feel good in the moment. It can be anything.
That
tiny.
Day?
Yes. Okay. The tiny, big, whatever that gave you a shot of actual emotion of yay,
endorphins.
Whatever it was. A little, like a little moment, and just start recording them, because I often have that thing where I feel I can't handle shit, so I just shut it all down.
Good and or then, bad?
Yes. It's all, it's none of my business.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
How I feel.
Yeah.
Is the mistake I make.
Like, don't just be neutral all the time.
Or just like, I can't do it right now. Yeah, so yeah. Like, if I reacted real time, it would be bad. So I just don't do anything.
Got it.
But the problem with that is you are not feeling the good things. Then you forget what's good. You forget what you like. You forget. And then that's how I get into abusing substances, because I feel like I need to replace it with like real good life experiences. Instead, it's like, I can't handle any of that. I'll just go home and like eat. I'll go home and get high. I'll go home and just lay there and watch TV. All those things that do not serve me. Mm-hmm. And so in trying to peel that behavior back, you have to remember what is good. Like, you can't just peel back things that are giving you comfort and then stand there. Mm-hmm. You have to like make lists of things you like. So I've been doing it daily. And she said, you have to do it with somebody else so that you do it. So I immediately thought of Lizzie.
I knew it. I knew it'd be Lizzie Cooperman.
Lizzie Cooperman is obviously our friend.
It's almost not fair, because of course it's easy for her.
I didn't even have to explain it. I go, will you do this thing? And she's like, totally. Like, it was like she was waiting to do it.
I love it.
So it's just these lists, and they're so odd, but it's just a thing that actually made you happy real time in a real moment. And it can be just hearing this person's voice on the phone.
Me.
You every time.
Will you do it with me for like one day a week?
100%.
Okay.
Absolutely. Okay. I just feel like we're in each other's business so much.
So much. We're
but
all
yes,
about
because
each other.
I'm telling you, having done this now for like, I think it's a week or two, maybe two, I am feeling real time things where I go, oh, I want more of this feeling. I'm going to do these. It's
and
like
I notice shit more too, because you're like, oh, I have to tell Lizzie that later. It's like, oh, this thing right now feels good. That's going to be on my list today.
Exactly. Or if I have spent, I want to say you so bad, but it's me. if I've spent the day in my house talking to no one but George and Frank, there's nothing to put on that list. Mm. So I have to go like, at least go to the store and talk to one old lady, because you need some shit on your good list.
Ugh.
And I swear it is like, it's like waking up this thing inside me where I'm like, I get to feel good shit real time. I get to be vulnerable, be in the world.
And I like it.
I can handle it. I like it. It's good. And that's the only way to get more good stuff.
It's practices. That's, you know.
Yeah.
It's your therapy practice.
Yeah.
And then the word practice is so important, because it's not do it or don't do it and do it right.
No, it's like,
just keep practicing.
Keep practicing. And I think the reason she did it, because there's been tons of times where like, Lizzie sends me, you know, 2 days in a row, and I'm like, what the fuck is this? And then I'm like, oh my God, I didn't do my list.
Well, Lizzie does this thing, and I kind of think this is it. She's only taught me this, and I know it's like Gail or someone's fucking thing. But
Oprah or Gail, you're not
Oprah
sure which.
It's the ta-da list instead of the to-do list. And Lizzie, of course, told me that so long ago, and I was like, oh my God.
What's that, like accomplishments?
A ta-da. You know, you write your fucking to-do list. I need to do this. I need that. You're, at the end of the day, ta-da list.
What I did?
Shit I fucking did right this week or this day, you know?
Yes.
Ta-da, motherfucker.
Yeah. Like,
that needs to be credited to someone, because...
Ta-da, motherfucker?
No, just the ta-da. I'm going to look it up, because it's nobody's. I'm claiming it. Stephen and I were Googling it. Okay, great.
Yeah, like little practices, like you say, little practices.
Remind yourself that you're not just a total piece of shit.
Well, and also it's the thing too, you know, it's to me, I always get worried when you and I talk about like our real experiences at the top of the show, because I don't want people to be mad at us or hate us for being in a great position and still complaining. Like,
oh,
that's my
God,
fear.
Yeah.
But I realized in kind of making these lists and stuff, I have so much to be overjoyed about every day.
Yeah.
I could fill up 10 lists, but I focus on what's negative, what I need to fight, what I need to do, what I'm not doing. Like all I do is focus on the bad stuff. And it makes the hugest difference when like I can remind myself, all your dreams are coming true.
Is this the beginning of our mental health podcast? I feel like it is.
I mean, it could be.
I drink a can of wine.
I just worry if we name it that the lawsuits will be coming down the mountain.
Karen and George's ta-da.
That's the first one we steal. We stole that. Oh, stolen. God,
who did I steal? I want to know who I stole that from because I know. But Lizzie, it's Lizzie's fault. It's Lizzie Cooperman. Let's all blame her.
If we do that, we have to pull Lizzie into it.
That's, oh my God, she could be our therapist.
She could, and the tarot reader.
And she'll read our tarots.
Yeah.
Cool. That was a beautiful fucking hooray. Oh, it's called fucking hooray.
It's called fucking hooray. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good job.
Thank you. It's actually, instead of like talking about a TV show, I was like, I should just say, I was not going to say it because I was like, oh, that's weird and private. No, and I shouldn't do it.
Oh my God. Show it off.
And every time I listen to my therapist talk, I'm like, God, I wish more people could hear her talking. Yeah. She said this thing. She goes, when human beings aren't supported and they don't have anyone that we just can't. That's the way she said it. And I was like, like, she's just deep, but in that real way of like, this is the truth.
Yeah.
This is how it is for people.
I dig it.
Me too.
I dig it. Fucking shit, man.
Guys, we barfed it out this week.
And I think it's, you know, flash everyone your emotion, flash everyone yourself.
Why not?
Like pull down your tube top.
Pull down your soul. Defensive tube top.
That's right.
And get your soul tits
flash
out.
Flash your soul. I promise you'll be rewarded with beads. Right? With Mardi Gras beads.
Yes, of with life. With spiritual life beads.
Spiritual Mardi Gras.
For your soul tits.
Life beads.
That you're flashing at every other human being.
And there we go. And everyone's better.
Yes.
The end.
Everything's cured. Did we do it?
We did
solved
it.
Gun control. We solved. God, this was a great...
We really did
we
it.
We solved complaining.
Complaining.
We solved vulnerability.
Listen, vulnerability 2020.
Right.
That's what's going to happen.
Vulnerable and ability.
Gosh, thanks for listening, guys.
Thanks, everybody.
If you got to this point, fuck, man.
Wow.
You're cured.
You must need something.
Go find it. We support you.
Good luck. Let us know what you find. And stay sexy.
And don't get murdered.
Goodbye.
Yeah! Holy shit.
Elvis, you want a cookie?